This morning, we'll be in the first chapter of Jonah. As you're finding your place there in Jonah chapter 1, we'll be looking at the second half of it. I invite you to think about some of the popular, I don't know if it's therapy or discussion tactics, conflict management, whatever you might call it. But there's this idea out there that really, there's this thing called my truth. Y'all heard about that? Let me speak my truth to you. Let me tell you what my truth is. Well, that's interesting you say that, but my truth says such and such. And I don't know exactly where it came from or when it actually started, but that seems to be a popular thing. How many of us remember that Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson movie, A Few Good Men, right? And there's that famous scene where they're arguing in the courtroom, and Lieutenant Cappy is saying, "I want the truth." And Jack Nicholson famously says, "You can't handle the truth," right? I mean, it's a great film. It really is. It's riveting and all of that. But I think what we've seen over at least my lifetime is this erosion of what the truth is. Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." He doesn't say, "I am a truth." He doesn't even say he's his truth, maybe even referring to God. He doesn't even say he's my truth. He says, "I am the truth." We want there to be this subjective kind of understanding about the way we see and feel the world. That what I perceive it as is reality, and you can infringe on that. You can have your reality and I'll have my reality, but that's it. There is no actual reality that sets the standard for everything. And that's where we find ourselves, whether it be in the political world or sports or friendships, relationships, education, any of those things where there's these conflicts about what is right and what is wrong. The problem seems to be that everybody feels like they are not wrong. They may not be right, but they are definitely not wrong, and it's a terrible place to be. Let's look together at Jonah chapter 1 in verse 7. We'll start together. Follow as I read along. "And they," these are the sailors, "they said to one another, 'Come, let us cast lots that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us.' And so they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. And then they said to him, 'Tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where did you come from? What is your country? And of what people are you?' And he said to them, 'I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land.' And then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, 'What is this that you have done?' For the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them. And then they said to him, 'What shall we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us?' For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. He said to them, 'Pick me up and hurl me into the sea. Then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know that it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you.' Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore, they called out to the Lord, 'O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it has pleased you.' So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. And then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah, And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Pray with me. Lord, help us not to get lost in the miracle of this event. Help us not to focus on what would have and could have and should have happened and how this couldn't have happened or how this might have happened. Lord, instead, let us focus on the truth that you are a God that created the heavens and the earth and that you can do as you please and that nothing is impossible for you. And Lord, when we remember that, may we also remember it in the context of our own sin and the salvation that you give, that nothing is impossible for you. We ask these things in your Son's name. Amen. We looked last week about the response of Jonah to God's calling and how that calling and our response is in direct correlation to how much faith we have, what it is that we truly believe. This week, we're looking at how God is calling to us, and we're seeing how in this particular story, God's calling, and these sailors, these mariners are hearing, and they have to respond. And I hope that we can find some wisdom about how we might apply this to ourselves. If I had to bring this down to one statement to kind of encapsulate what we're trying to look at this morning, it would be this: God calls all people to respond to what they recognize as truth. God calls all people to respond to what they recognize as truth. Jonah heard from God and ran the exact opposite direction. He didn't want to listen to what God was telling him to do. He didn't like the Ninevites. He didn't want to help them. He could care less. He could not care less about what was going to happen to them. And so he tucked tail and ran. And as he was running, he was on the boat, and the big storm caused a big waves and all kinds of craziness and all kinds of trouble. And he tried to hide from it, but he can't. They found him sleeping there in the bottom, and they bring him up to the deck, and they start talking to him about what's going on here. In the midst of this raging sea, in the midst of the tossing and the turning and the lightning and the rain and all the wind and all of that that's happening, they're having this conversation. And don't you know that at the very beginning, it's kind of funny because we've heard these details before, right? You know, they cast him out. Even in the midst of the raging sea, and they've done everything that they can do, right? What does it come down to? The casting of lots, right? Like, even still, Jonah doesn't say, yeah, hey guys, this is my fault. My bad. I'm the one that did that. He still is trying to hide. And they have to play this casting lots, drawing straws. We don't know exactly what it is, a roll of the dice or picking the lucky stone or whatever it might be. But nonetheless, that's what happens, that even in that, he's trying to hide from it. Oh, poor Jonah. It seems like he's not doing much right, it says. But as we look at the story and how it unfolds, I think that we really need to see what it is that truth really boils down to. And how it's easy for us to assume that my reality, my truth, is mine and individual, that I can own it and it might be right for me. It doesn't have to be right for you, but I'm going to do what I want with it. We see that how that happens, right? You know, everybody is always against, you know, whatever that big sin of the day is or that big, you know, taboo. Right? And we say, this is not right, and this will proclaim it, that, hey, you shouldn't do this, or you shouldn't do that, or whatever it is. And I know even right now, things are running through your head of like, what you know is right, and what you know is wrong, and this and that. But then what happens when it happens to you, or when you find a family member or a close member caught up in that, and maybe your vision of it changes a little bit, because you've never been put in that situation where someone's there, right? You know? And it could be any number of things, but we see that because when it's in our, you know, sometimes it's easy for what's true to be off in the abstract, but when it comes to live in my house, then I've got to make some choices about it. And the same is true with Jonah. Yeah, God, I know you want to save the whole world and you want all people to worship you and obey you. That's great. And if you want something to happen about it, God, make it happen. I'm so glad you did. And I'm just going to sit back here in Jerusalem and Judea and Israel, and I'm a Hebrew. I don't have to worry about anybody else beyond my walls. But then he gets picked up by the scruff of the neck and he says, God says, hey, go. You know how you're happy that I'm trying to save the whole world? I'm going to use you. And then he's like, well, no, this is not what I signed up for. I'm here to worship here. I'll serve here. Don't make me go somewhere else, right? When it comes to living our house, it's a little bit different. And I think that happens to us all the time. We know that, you know, certain things are wrong and we stop that. We go against them, right? But then once they come to live in, once you maybe you get caught up in it yourself, and you've got to deal with that, and you've got to struggle with that, and you start making those certain allowances about what's right and what's wrong, and suddenly truth is no longer the truth. It's not even a truth, it's my truth, because you modify and you can make it work for you. And what I thought we could see from this passage is how that plays out. First off, I want us to see that our senses recognize, or how our senses recognize the supernatural, the supernatural. We think about this story, and it sounds, you know, it's almost like a fairy tale sometimes where we don't even worry about the details. But think about the details. They are on this little boat. I mean, now it's, you know, it's probably bigger than just your average speedboat or whatever. But, you know, there's, you know, it's not a great vessel, you know, that the Titanic or whatnot. It's powered by sails and powered by oars. And so they're sailing across the Mediterranean Sea, and the surf is splashing up on them, the lightning and the thunder, the rain is coming in every direction, waters, they're tipping and turning. I mean, think about what kind of, sensory overload they might be going through. And realize that it's God doing it to get their attention, and more specifically, Jonah's attention. And how their senses are leading them to the truth that, hey, something big is doing this. This is not just your average storm. Someone's getting our attention. What are we going to do about it? And they start responding. You know, it's very dangerous sometimes when we rely on our senses because we can't always trust them. Do this exercise for me. Take your little pointer finger and your thumb and rub them together, right? Y'all, hopefully everybody can feel. I know some of us might not have that dexterity or that feeling or whatever it is. Let me ask you, is your finger touching your thumb or is your thumb touching your finger? Which one are you feeling? You ever wonder that? Like they're touching each other, but which one is sending you the response? Is it your thumb saying, oh yeah, I feel in my finger? Or is the, you know what I mean? Like something as simple as that can kind of get crossways. I walked into the back of the church and there was this cold kind of smell they were saying, and I couldn't smell it at one thing. They said it's a little off out there. We need to put out some air freshener or whatnot there in the fellowship hall area of the church. But my nose is so stopped up because of these allergies, I'm like, well, it's fine to me. And they're, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. Aaron has come home a couple of times after I've cooked and be like, whoa, what happened in here? Did something get a little burned or what have you? And that's the way, you know, I didn't notice it. That's the way it goes. Our senses sometimes fail us. But if God ever does use our senses, our touch, our taste, our smell, our vision to see him in action, we should pay attention to that. We should watch it because God can speak to us in these actual, real ways, these tangible things that we can see and taste and smell and so on and so forth. And just like these sailors, just like these folks on the boat were seeing and hearing what God was doing, we should respond as well. And this, our senses can help us in recognizing the supernatural. Secondly, I want us to see our wisdom in recognizing the super obvious. Wisdom in recognizing the super obvious. When I think about people, when they talk about truth, oftentimes it's in the way that they understand the world that's around them. It's in a way that they understand how the natural world displays God's character, and they've got to interpret that. And they have all this knowledge that they're possessing, but then they have to put it into action. And they have to put it into motion and apply it. And what happens here is that the sailors recognize that something is happening supernaturally, and they know that this in their extensive knowledge as sailors, that this is not a normal storm, and that this actual storm came up out of nowhere, and it's not part of what should be happening, and they're not moving, and everything that they've done in the past to deal with storms is not actually working, and it's actually getting worse. And the more that they do to combat it, the more that it actually gets worse, right? They keep on throwing things over. We saw that last week. They've done it here. They've come to the knowledge. And they say, okay, we've got to, using all the knowledge of what the storm means and how it's different from a normal storm, that God is doing something crazy, something specific, something bigger. They have the wisdom to say, okay, if we recognize this is true, we need to do something about it. Now, they don't know exactly what to do about it, so they go about casting lots, but they come down to this obvious choice. They cast lots, and then it's interesting that they cast these lots, and then what do they want? They want the knowledge of why it's happening, because it said in verse 10, at the end of verse 10, they already knew that he was fleeing from the presence of their God, of his God. They already knew that, right? But they didn't care. Sure, look, you're paying money, go along. You're going to help us out a little bit on the boat, whatever. I don't care. Whatever reason, you're going to run from your God, do whatever you have to. But when the storm presents itself and all the knowledge that they have, they're seeking more knowledge. And in verse 8, they say, tell us on whose account this evil has come upon. What's your occupation? Where do you come from? Where is your country? What people are you from? They're trying to find out more knowledge so that they can make a wise choice about what obviously is happening, that the supernatural is limiting them from going further, prohibiting them from going further. And they're trying to use that knowledge to go, to somehow fix this, to somehow make it better, that maybe this understanding, maybe true understanding will come if we have all of the knowledge and we can actually put it into a wise choice. And we do that all the time, where we want all of the statistics or all the reasons. We look at the medical research. We look at the consumer reports about the products, and we try to understand this, that, and the other, and to put it all into place. But eventually, you've got to step out into that faith and do the thing that you can. I remember when my friend Bobby Higginbotham and his wife were going to plant the church up in Tacoma, Washington. We visited them this past fall, and they did for 18 months. They did surveys, and they prayer walked, and they spoke with different communities and different places. And once they found that place that they knew that God was leading them, they had to figure out, what kind of job can we have there? Where can we live? What can we do? What kind of people live in this neighborhood or in this area? And they did all that research and all of those things so that they would try to make a good start with the church that they were trying to plant. They made friends in all these different places and tried to put it all together. But eventually they had to say, okay, now We're going to make this next start, and we're going to act like a church. We're going to serve like a church. We're going to be the church. They didn't have a building. They didn't have a budget. They didn't even have a church van, but they just kept on they trusting on him because they had put together all that knowledge, and they started to use it into wisdom to go and do what God was calling them to do. Because when you see what's obvious and what God has obviously laid out for you to do, the next thing that you have to do is walk out in faith. And respond to that and start moving in that direction. Now, one thing that got into the sailors, the mariners' way, was the third thing, that humanity recognizes the super fears. The super fears. When they cast the straws, cast the lots, pulled straws, whatever it was, and they figured out it was Jonah, it's like, okay, they tossed him out, right? No, they didn't know that what needed to happen. They asked, they tried to get that knowledge, and then once they had that knowledge, they came down to that question and said, "What? This is verse 11, what shall we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us?" Notice here where their fears are. At this moment, the fear is not in God. The fear is in the sea, because they have seen ships sink before. They have known sailors that left out and did not come back. We have the benefit of National Geographic and submarines that have gone down and seen what's underneath the ocean floor. In Jesus' day, nobody had seen more than 6 feet below water, you know what I mean? Because after that, it gets pretty dark and cloudy. And they don't know what's down there. Who knows what's underneath the deep? And they're afraid of that. They don't know how far it is to the bottom. They don't know if there's rocks or if there's animals or fish or whatever have you. And their fear is in that. But then they get the message from Jonah. He says, toss me over the side. When you toss me over the side, it will appease God and you'll be safe. And naturally, they did that, right? They said, okay, that's perfect. No, it says, still, they continued rowing against trying to get to the sea, right? That they kept on trying to get to dry land. And why is that? Because in their humanity, they were afraid of the sea, but also, too, they were afraid of hurting someone else and bringing ruin and pain to, I mean, they were basically killing this man. There's no way this man would have survived Jonah if throwing him over in the storm. And they didn't want that to be on their consciences. They didn't want that to be on them. So much so that in verse 14 they say this, O Lord, and it's interesting here, they actually say his name, Yahweh, right? They actually call him Yahweh. Yahweh, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, you, Yahweh, have done as it pleased you. See, when Jonah talked to them and said, I worship this God, God, Jehovah, Yahweh, who created the heavens and the earth and everything that's in them, they knew that they were dealing with a real live God. Not some idol that sat on a shelf, not some image that they would bow down to, but something that had power, something that had might, something that had purpose behind it, and the ability to wreak havoc on them. And that they had prayed to all their other gods, they had bowed down to all their other idols, they had looked and remembered every image that they'd ever seen of any god that they could even think of, and nothing changed it. But here this man, Jonah, speaks of Jehovah, Yahweh, the God, the Lord, the one that has created the heavens and earth. And I said, okay, well, it must be that. We've done every single other one under in the encyclopedia, every other one in the telephone directory of gods. So it must be this one. And so they offer out their prayer. They ask for forgiveness. They say, don't hold us accountable. And they toss him over. But even in the midst of it, their humanity says, we've got to find a better way. how many of us in our own lives, in our humanity, think that we can beat back that sin, that we can control that temptation. Right? Remember all those images that were falling through your mind when I was talking about that sin that we know is wrong, but then it comes to live in our house, and then we start making different rules about it, different exceptions, different things. How many of you guys think, well, I've made a resolution. I've made it 12 days. If I can make it to 21 days, then it's a habit. I'll be free from it. If I can make it to 37 days or 53 or whatever the number is, then I'll know that I've conquered it. And I won't have to talk about it. I won't have to share with it. I won't have to face it anymore. I'll be free from it. In our humanity, we think, oh no, just one more time, one more time, God, forgive me. Get me past this. Get me through this. I'll just get one more little step through here and I won't have to worry about this anymore. And we're going to be like those sailors, those mariners, stroking the storm, trying to get to that dry land, trying to get to that place of safety and rest. And there's nothing you can do about it in your humanity. That the fears of this life will cripple you and will change you. Chain you. You won't be able to move. You won't be able to go. You won't be able to do. Jesus came to set us free, not from tyranny of some government, not from some social norms or social oppression that's happening. He came to free us from the bonds of sin and the grip of death that lay claim the rights to your soul. And in one fell swoop of love and mercy and grace, because of his holiness, plucked you out of that miry pit, grasped you out of that fiery furnace, plucked you off that conveyor belt of death, and placed you in his ever-loving arms. Only him. Only him. The way, the truth, the life. And what happened at the end of this? Verse 15, they picked up Jonah and they hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its ragings. The fourth thing that we'll see this morning is that nature helps us recognize the super clear. Romans chapter 1 says that all of creation speaks of the majesty of God, so that none of us are without excuse. And in this instance, and in this story, and in this passage here, the sailors saw God in his truth, and in his power, in his glory, in his holiness, that what was promised by the prophet Jonah came true the moment he splashed the water. Verse 16, then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, feared Yahweh exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to him, to Yahweh, and they made vows. They recognized a God when he showed up. They recognized the truth when they saw it. They didn't say it was my truth or a truth. They knew it as the truth. And they made vows and they started to worship, to sacrifice him. Now, we don't know the rest of their story. But friends, it's not for us to know the rest of their story. It's for you to know the rest of your story and where it's heading. And what destination are you looking to? Are you like Jonah at the beginning, running from God, and he's called you to follow him and serve him? Are you like Jonah, and you've been caught in your sin and in your shame and in your disobedience, and you're just ready to say, give me up, just kill me? Because that's what Jonah's saying here. Just look, I've been caught by God. My life is forfeit. Plunk me over. I'm sure he'll figure out how those Ninevites are going to work it out. He'll get it all under control. But me, I've been caught. I'm just take me now. Hopefully I'll make it in. Or you can be like these sailors, these mariners that saw the truth of God and didn't know any other response except for worship and to make promises to trust in him. Again, it's not important their story, it's important your story. And as we look at Jonah's story, notice what happens. Because I got to imagine that toss in over the boat, side of the boat and into the ocean probably felt like a lifetime. I think it would for me. You'd have kind of that life flash before your eyes, so to speak, and see what's happening and remember all the truth. And as he's expecting to just, well, I didn't listen to God. Here I am, going to be dead. Notice what God does. Nature shows up and makes it super clear to Jonah what he must do. It says, the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Jonah in there just hanging out, thinking, woe is me. Why can't this just fish just already digest me and move me out now? Why am I still here? Jonah's still here because God's not finished yet. This story is not complete yet. While there is the truth, we still have to respond to it. And this morning, that's what we're going to do. You, as you sit there, me, as I stand here, I don't even want anybody to get up. I just want us to sit down where we are. And in our hearts, respond to God. We know the truth, God, that you created the heavens and the earth, and that I have sinned, and I am far from you. But I don't want to be. I want to be in your bosom again. I want to be in your way. I want to be in your truth. Help me to be there. That's the response that we should be making, that we should worship and make a sacrifice and make vows to serve him and him alone. Friends, if that's where you are this morning, let's take that time to do it. Pray with me. Father, our response to you this morning, hearing your truth read clearly, is that we are sinners and you are the God of creation. We ask, Lord, that you would help us to walk in your ways, to not flee from your truth or from your calling, but that in our response it would be a reflection of the faith that we have, that what you say is right, what you say is true, and there is no alternate reality. May we walk in those ways. May we be obedient to you. And may with every word and every deed and even every thought serve you and you alone. Help us, Lord, to trust in you. Help us, Lord, to know you intimately, to serve you faithfully, and to follow you endlessly. We ask these things in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.